Hey everyone, I just want to record a quick message at the top of this week's episode is still loading, the third episode of Mario Month. Nothing major, nothing involving the coronavirus though. Be safe out there, everybody. I'm very thankful and grateful that everyone that I know is okay. I just hope that everyone out there is doing well as well with this kind of anxious and anxiety driven time. But in any case, the purpose of this little message at the top is to kind of give a little shout out to the Bit by Bit Foundation. You see, when I first recorded this episode, this was about a month ago, I was sick and I was very congested, and you can definitely hear it. So I normally would just drop this in the middle of the episode, but because my voices sound so different, I figured I'll just put it up at the top. So the Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to fundraise and provide video games for children receiving inpatient care at children's hospitals. You can check out their webpage at bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating if you can. They are a partner of the Still Loading podcast, so it would mean a lot to me if you check out their website, and I am super happy to be partnered with them. So that's all I had. Stay safe, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode. On this episode of Still Loading, getting sticky with Captain Syrup. Mmm. Hello everyone, this is Josh, and welcome to this episode of Still Loading. We are continuing Mario Month with this episode. I apologize in advance, I am very congested and it probably sounds it, I can hear it right now, but I didn't have a whole lot of time. I'm actually feeling pretty good, just congested as hell, so hopefully it doesn't sound too bad. But with me, as per usual, for all my Mario Month episodes is my good old buddy, Casey. Casey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. It's always a pleasure doing this.
So we are, Casey, you and I are talking about the third game in the Mario Land series. And this game is vastly different from the previous two games in the series. Now it's been a while. It's been about a month or so since we last recorded the first two episodes. We are recording these pretty far in advance. Mainly because of the big summer project that's coming up, which will be announced at the end of Mario Month. So keep an eye ear out for that.
Get ready.
Get wrecked. No. So we're talking about Mario Land 3, Super Mario Land 3 Wario Land. And this game was released on January 21st, 1994 in Japan, and on March 13th, 1994 in the US. It was released in May 13th, 94 in the PAL regions.
So we're coming up on 25 years in March. I'm going to have to replay it at that point. No, my math is long.
26.
My math is completely
wrong. This was 25
26.
Years old. Yeah, it was 25 right. year old,
That's
old
right.
last
it's,
year.
It's 2020.
2020. So we're talking about Super Mario Land 3. This game was fascinating to me because, unlike the previous Mario Land games, one, it shouldn't really be called Mario Land. I know they totally threw it in there just to get essentially link the two together. You have Super Mario Land 2, Super Mario Land 3, but Super Mario Land 3, they in big letters on this, it's just called Wario Land. So this is where we're going to kind of divert a little bit from the classic Mario canon, because the next two episodes after this are going to be the Wario Land games. I know it's a little different. It's not quite Mario, but it did start from a Mario series, so I'm kind of counting it. And I know we're actually going to run out of Wario Land games for this. Or sorry, we're going to run out of time to cover all these Wario Land games, because there is a Wario Land 4, I believe, and that's not going to fit into Mario Month, but it will fit in on like an odds and ends month, maybe next year or a year after that or something like that. So Wario Land or Mario Land 3 was a huge departure from the rest of the series, mainly because it got rid of Mario, because you play as Wario. And on top of that, besides just playing as Wario, you are playing a completely different gameplay style. Casey, what was one of your first impressions of, like, you've peed in this game, right?
I have. So I originally borrowed this from a friend back in the day because it had the Mario Land title in it, and I'm thinking, it would be relatively similar gameplay, but obviously that was not the case.
Yeah.
Back then when I first originally played it, I was honestly not a fan.
Well, you were expecting Mario. Yeah, exactly. Your expectations were completely subverted.
Right. So I really wasn't a fan. So years later, I picked it up again, and it really grew on me. So it was one of those games where, you know, at first I didn't like it, and then tried it again. It's like, okay, this is really good. So
I think what captured my imagination about Wario Land was how inventive all the different things were, because it was a complete... I mean, this game, like we said, this is 26 years old now, but the gameplay style was so unique and inventive for the time, because you didn't really see a lot of exploratory platformers like that. Specifically, like, I would say the closest example is Metroid, because Metroid is an exploratory platformer, but it's also more of a linear progression type of thing, non-linear progression type of game. Wario Land is exploratory within the levels, mm-hmm. but it is still a linear game because you go level by level by level by level.
It integrates a lot of puzzles in it too, mm-hmm. a lot of puzzle solving, which is, you know, for a Mario game at that time was different. And especially for a handheld, for like vacations or road trips or whatever.
It was a pretty long game really too.
Neat. Yeah.
So what one of the biggest differences in this game is that coins do nothing for you in terms of lives. It is a very important factor. They are still a very important factor within the gameplay, but they do nothing for you in terms of lives. What they do is they basically give you treasure, and you can use, if you collect 10 coins, you can actually basically trade in 10 of those coins for like a weapon. Essentially, you get to throw a giant 10 piece coin at an enemy and hurt them. So you could do that. You could also spend the 10 coins to do things like buying saves within levels. Essentially, you could buy checkpoints with it. So you could spend 10 coins and it would pop into a little slot and it would save the spot where you are on the level. You could also use the 10 coins. You also needed at least 10 coins to exit a level. So if you didn't have 10 coins at the time because you're really bad and you're getting hit a lot and you're losing coins, you actually had to go back through the level and recollect some coins. I mean, theoretically, that might mean that you could be so bad that you would never get out, because if you collected all the coins and then lost all of those coins to getting hit by enemies, you're kind of fucked.
Yeah.
So that it was an interesting departure from the series, and the music's really good. Mm-hmm. The graphics are really pleasant. This is the last Mario Land game to be in black and white, because after this, Wario Land 2 was in color, and obviously the rest of the games after that were in color.
And it was the last one to have the Super Mario Land moniker in the title.
Well, there was yes and no, because then I think Mario Land changed to, actually this is a good point, because didn't Mario, like Super Mario Land 4 was like Super Mario World or something like that?
That's Super Mario Brothers 4.
Really?
Yeah, Super Mario Brothers 4 in Japan was Super Mario World.
Well, no. I'm talking about like, because on the
Game you're talking Boy, about the Advance.
The Advance. Super, oh, yeah, no, yeah. It's Super Mario Advance, yeah, 4. That's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. I was just going by the land.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. No, you're right. It is the last one to be called Super Mario Land. Up until then, you would get Super Mario 3D Land, mm-hmm. For the 3DS, which I actually have not played. I beat 3D World, and I really enjoyed 3D World, but I have not played 3D Land yet, so I need to get on that.
Yeah, it's definitely worth buying. It's funny. I know there's a bootleg homebrew of Super Mario Land 4, which the art and the gameplay is goofy. For some reason, I have it on my computer. I don't know how it got there. I think I just got it in bulk. I never really gave it a shot, but I'm just like, what the hell is this? Yep. So, I mean, as we were discussing in the previous episodes, going over the developers and the publishers and whatnot, same with this game. It's the Nintendo R&D 1.
I think that's me. Or was it 4?
This one is 1. This or the other 1. One's 4?
No, okay, this makes sense, actually, because R&D 4 is Miyamoto's group, and Miyamoto didn't really have much of a hand with a lot of the handheld Mario, so that actually makes sense. So R&D 1, okay.
Yeah, and then the producer was Gunpei Yokoi. Legendary.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, I know.
For those who remember, I did do an episode on him a while ago, but it was what I called Game Industry Legends Profile. It's a really long name. I should probably change that. But I wanted to do an episode. I might actually bring him back. I had an idea for a series of talking about individuals who had very big impacts on the game industry, and Yokoi was a no-brainer. I mean, he created the Game Boy, he created the D-pad, he created Game & Watch, he also created the Virtual Boy, so you take some bad, but the majority of it's good. Though now,
I even want the Virtual Boy.
I want a Virtual Boy really bad. They're expensive as shit, though.
They are.
No, so R&D1, okay. Anything else you were able to look up?
So, the composers were Kazue Ishikawa and Ryoji Yoshitomi. Why can't I think of his name?
Koji Kondo. Is that who you're trying to think of? The original Mario guy?
Right. No, yeah. I know he's the legendary one, but no, the one...
Who did the last one?
Why am I drawing a blank? Totaka song or something?
Oh, Totaki song.
Totaki song. Yeah, he's
Kazumi Totaka.
Yeah, Totaka's not. He did not have a.
Did not have a hand in this one.
No, he did not.
So this game, you have a total of three different. Well, actually, four different power ups. One of them being the Starman, which makes Wario invincible. But you have three different power ups. You have the bull helmet, the jet helmet, and the dragon helmet. So this kind of sets Wario up it's very much Wario meets Mario in the sense that Mario gets different power-ups and therefore gets different abilities. Wario is similar, but each of his abilities, I would say, interacts with the world a little bit. It's a little bit more dynamic than all of Mario's abilities because... I mean, Mario's abilities, they help you defeat enemies or traverse in specific areas. Like, you know, the cape in Super Mario World where it helps you get up to, like, hidden levels. Or, if you're really good, just fly over an entire level. That's always fun to do. But each of the power-ups helped Wario find ways to destroy the environment a little bit easier, it seemed like. So, for example, the bull helmet, it increases Wario's strength, doubles the length of his shoulder charge, and also allows him to stick to the ceiling and perform butt stomps, which I actually didn't know he could stick to ceilings. Like, if you had the bull helmet on, you could jump up and just let him hang up there for a little bit.
That's pretty cool.
But you could also have him slam down to the ground and, you know, slam his butt and, like, either kill enemies or also... I don't know if it stunned them. The jet helmet increases Wario's running speed it increases his running speed. It also lets him fly horizontally for a short period of time, and it also gives him the ability to shoulder charge underwater. You know what? I guess we didn't even really talk about it. The big difference between Wario's move sets and Mario's move sets. Mario, the only thing he can do is just jump, and he also can slide down ramps to, like, kill enemies, which doesn't really happen until Super Mario Bros. 3, but still. But in Wario Land, he has the charge ability. He can also slide down things and actually curl up into a ball and just, like, and, like, roll past enemies, which is a lot of fun. You can also jump while you're rolling in that ball, so that way you can, like, hop over things. They actually created some interesting puzzle platforming segments with that, where you'd get the tiniest little bit, you'd have the tiniest hill, and you could see, like, okay, well, maybe there's a hidden thing. Because I remember when I first played through this, I was so confused as to seeing, like, breakable blocks that were only one square high. Mm-hmm. So Wario was, you know, it's about two squares high, and he couldn't break through them. He could break through the first one, but he couldn't break through any of the others because his charge animation wouldn't go there. So, and it took me about over halfway through the game to realize that, oh, you're supposed to roll down the side and let him, like, tunnel through everything. But it was cool because then it would kind of force you, if you messed it up, you'd have to go back and redo that and you'd have to figure out the right rhythm and method to get over the different obstacles so you could plow through all that.
Yeah. It is neat how they kind of differentiated his moveset and... You know, him being this big guy, he will also come across other types of enemies that are even bigger than him and even cause him problems. So that was pretty cool. I mean, I don't really know what else to say about that, but
I mean, yeah. He has one other power up we haven't talked about yet, and it's the Dragon Helmet. The Dragon Helmet shoots it shoots long range bursts of flames, and this also works underwater too. This replaces his shoulder charge, so when you have the Dragon Helmet on, he can't, like, you know, lead with his shoulder. It shoots through it, just replaces it, you know, shoots fire. And actually, there is one that I forgot. You also have Small Wario, where Wario transforms into, you know, a small version of himself. He is then not able to body slam, and taking more damage results in a loss of a life. Small Wario can transform back into regular Wario by finding a garlic pot or by completing a level. He can transform directly to Bull Dragon or Jet Wario just by finding the applicable power up. So that was actually read directly off the Mario Wiki, but that's Wario's movesets, and it, like we said at the beginning of the episode, it's very interesting to see how different he is from Mario, because even though it's a Mario Land game, well, clearly it's meant to be a Wario Land. I mean, but the whole reason they put the Mario Land on the title was to introduce the character of Wario as a playable concept, mm-hmm. not just the villain from the previous game. As you play through the game, there are multiple worlds, and in each world there are multiple levels, so it's very Mario-like with that. And actually, the final level is Syrup Castle, hence the little intro for the beginning of the episode. There's a whole bunch of different enemies. There's a cavalcade of different enemies you can choose from, or that you get to fight. Probably my least favorite enemy in the entire game would have to be the Kumari missiles, which are these weird projectiles that get shot by another enemy. It was just obnoxious to fight. I'm not describing this well, but they were probably my least favorite enemy. But there are so many different enemies in this game. Like, even just looking at the wiki here, there is easily 15, 20. There's a lot of different bosses. And actually, one of the things that stood out to me the most in the Wario Land games were the boss fights. Because unlike Mario, where a lot of the boss fights are pretty simplistic overall, Mario World, I think, was the first one that I remember where the bosses tried to do something a little bit different each time. It was all were they the Koopa Kids in the castle? I couldn't remember. I knew the Koopa Kids were in the third. Yeah. They were in Mario Bros. 3, but I couldn't remember if they were in World as well.
Yep. And then you also had, like, the sub-bosses, like the Reznors, which are the rhinos that shoot the fireballs.
But even that, it was just the same thing over again. They would have a little bit different pattern for the bridges to get broken up and destroyed. But overall, it was the same thing. But the Koopa Kids were the ones that had slightly different patterns to them. But for the most part, it was still just figure out their one note pattern and jump on their head.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much about it. But Wario, like, all the bosses were super interesting. There's the spiked Koopa, which he has a three part attack. He strikes from the land, air, and underground. His shell makes him invulnerable to ground pounds and fire. But he can be rammed into it, which exposes his soft belly. And then after three hits of hitting his stomach, after, you know, you ram into him, he flips over and you ground pound on his stomach. Three of those and you defeat him. Once again, it's kind of the three and out thing that almost all Mario games go for. But that's the first boss of the game. But then the next one is Bifoon, Spike Koopa you fight at the end of the Rice Beach world. Bifoon you fight at the end of Mount Teapot World. And I guess that actually, before I talk about the other boss, the other levels or the other worlds, you have Rice Beach, like I mentioned before. You have Mount Teapot. You have Sherbert Land, Stove Canyon, SST Cup, Parsley Woods, and Syrup Castle.
I'm sorry. As much as I love the Super Mario Brothers series, they are so uncreative.
Really?
When it comes to that. I've always had a pet peeve with the lands and the enemies that they've come up with. I feel like they could have done so much better.
You don't like Donut Plains?
No.
Well, come on. You don't. I'm trying to think of like another
ant. I saw a meme that said Waluigi is one of those concepts that you can't tell whether Nintendo was trying too hard or not hard enough. And I'm like, wow, that is so true.
Because he's just literally... What I liked about Wario, and I think we mentioned it in the last episode, but Wario is bad Mario, and it's like Warui, it means bad in Japanese.
I like that. That's cool.
And
yeah.
Well, actually, that might be Luigi, because Waluigi is Warui. It's very... like, that's a little bit more on the nose than anything. So it's true. Weird, because it's like they are... They literally, it seems like they're not trying hard enough with that, but at the same time, it completely works because the characters are so like 1920s villain with like, you know, the pencil thin mustache and like the top hat. Yeah. I'm going to tie her to the railroad tracks. Yeah. yeah. Oh, that's funny though. I guess also because we kind of were talking about the different worlds, we should mention what the plot of Wario Land 1 is, because we haven't really even talked about it. But the plot of the game is essentially, I'm going to read this directly off the wiki, because if I try to explain it off the top of the dome, I usually have a lot of ums and ahs. So just for any of you asking, yes, I'm reading this directly off the wiki. But desiring to replace and restore the castle he lost to his rival in Super Mario Land 2, Wario sets out to steal a golden statue of Princess Toadstool from the Brown Sugar Pirates and Captain Syrup. Yeah, there you go, Captain Syrup. Which he intends to ransom for the money to buy his own castle. Along the way, he collects or steals any other coins and treasures he finds, or any other coins or treasures he finds, and knocks out enemies. The game is spent navigating a number of levels to reclaim his lost treasures and has a significant level of replayability due to the branch path that many of the levels take. In the end, Captain Syrup, revealed to be a female, which was hidden in the instruction manual, is defeated while Wario ultimately gets anything from a bird. Is defeated and Wario gets treasure. So, well, it's cool because Wario's whole beef through all of his series is that he just wants treasure. He is chaotic neutral at its best. I guess that would be chaotic. He just wants money. I don't know if that's chaotic neutral. Anyone online, let me know if I'm right with that. I'm pretty sure that's chaotic neutral. But he just wants money, and that motif does not change ever throughout, at least so far in the games that we're talking about here. I have not played Wario Land 4, mind you, but I don't see that changing, since that appears to be his theme. But what's cool at the end of this game is that once you beat all the worlds and you beat all the levels, depending on how much treasure you collected throughout the game will determine what type of a house Wario gets. If you end up with one money bag, which is essentially you get 300 to 10,000 total coins throughout your playthrough, you get a birdhouse. Congratulations, you're bad. If you get two money bags, which is actually what I got, so I'm one step above bad, but still pretty terrible. That's 10,072 to be exact, to 40,007 total. Why are these so specific? So the first one is 300 to 10,071 coins. You get a birdhouse. Then you have 10,072 to 40,007 total coins. You get, which is two money bags. You get a tree trunk, which is what I get. So I got a tree trunk. If you get 40,008 to 70,007, you get a log cabin. 70,008 to 90,007, pagoda. 90,008 to 99,998 total coins, you get a castle. And if you get all the coins, 99,999, all the coins, all 15 treasures, and 40 courses cleared, because there's a lot of courses in this, you get a planet. You get a full fucking planet.
Wario, and if you get 1 million, you have to find that special extra one, you get a girlfriend.
Is that true?
I have no idea. Okay. That'd be great, though.
That'd be really funny. What would it be like? Princess Wapichi? That was stupid. I'm not even... That wasn't even a joke. That was just bad. Yeah.
I would have loved that, though, if that was a real thing.
Wapichi? Well, no,
I would say if you find that super secretive extra coin.
And Wario gets a girlfriend.
Yeah, he gets a girlfriend.
Find out it's just actually like female Waluigi.
Waria.
Waria, that's better. Okay, that makes a lot better. I was going with like, because you know, you have like Wario is Warui plus Mario.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Waluigi, Warui plus Waluigi. So you get Wally.
Toadstool?
Yeah, I know, right?
What Daisy?
I don't know. But anyway, so that's the plot of the game, and you play through all the different worlds. We mentioned already Rice Beach and Mount Teapot, but in Sherbert Land, there's Stove Canyon, SST Cup, Parsley Woods, and Syrup Castle. And there's bosses. To go back to how I went off on that whole tangent, then there's all the different bosses for it. So like Bifoon, like we said, is the boss for Mount Teapot. He's kind of like a bull. Bifoon kind of looks like a bull, yeah. He's immune to head stomps and ground pounds due to his horns and thick hide. He attempts to destroy Wario by picking him up and throwing him into the lava below their battleground. To defeat him, Wario has to throw him into the lava instead. Bifoon, I think, was... I just like his design a lot. Actually, this is terrifying. On the wiki, if you go into his page, they actually colorize him. Because normally, you know, he's just black and white from the Game Boy. Look at this, Casey. That's terrifying.
Yeah, that is pretty creepy. I like it, though.
I think my favorite part about his design is that, you know how bulls have like the you always see in like cartoons, bulls have the ring through their nose.
Oh yeah, the septum piercing. Yeah.
This guy has that too, but he has a human nose on a bull's head, like a giant ass human nose on a bull's head. It's mortifying. That's clearly a human nose, right?
Kind of looks like a penis. Oh, my mind. I need to.
No, you're right. It's there. It's absolutely horrifying. I can't get over it. Like, and I can't stop looking at it. It's funny though. Actually, right where his horns are up at the top, it totally looks like those would be the testicles. I'm just saying. So then the next boss is Hinyari, who is the boss of Sherbert Land. Hinyari is a big freaking mammoth of a penguin. And he's got like spikes for fists and stuff like that. Spikes boxing gloves. But he's immune to ground pounds and fire, but Wario can hurt him by hitting him on his head, which makes sense. He then dons a spiky helmet, which Wario can simply knock off with a slam and then attacks the penguin, which, hold on. No, okay, that makes sense. The last boss was immune to slams, to ground pounds. So each of the bosses have a unique mechanic, and we're going to get to it in Wario Land 2, but they add like some really interesting ideas for boss fights in Wario Land 2, which I'm really excited to talk about. But then to just kind of continue down with the boss list, you have Fun. Fun. It's a big face.
You see what I'm saying? Like, they can do so much better.
So Spite Koopa is, you know, okay, it's not creative, but it fits with the world. I can give that. Bifoon is, I don't know if that's a pun for like beef, like because he's a bull, Bifoon. Hinyari is a penguin. Hinyari is an interesting name. Fun is just a giant stone head his description on the wiki is very erotic.
tell.
Is Stonehead, whose fighting style revolves around breaking blocks with his tongue and trying to get Wario to fall into a chasm and spinning rocks. Breaking blocks with his tongue, trying to get Wario to fall in a chasm and spinning rocks. Fun is immune to fire, coins, and ground pounds, but the rubble his attacks leave behind are picked up by Wario and thrown at him to defeat him. So even just going from the previous boss to the last one, like the last two bosses, Hinyari and Bifoon, it was very much where you have to stun them in order. Actually, even the Spike Koopa, it's you have to stun them to reveal their weak spot and then damage them. This fourth boss, I can't get over that stupid name.
Fun.
You have to use his own projectiles against him as a weapon. The next boss, Fun was the boss of Stove Canyon. Hinari was the boss of Sherberland, Bifun Mount Teapot, and Spike Koopa Rice Beach. But the next one is the boss of SS Teacup. Underwhelming level world name, but fair enough. And the boss's name is Bobo. That's all it is.
Is it a clown?
No, it is a giant bird.
Okay.
Not expecting that. I thought you said you beat this.
Like 10 years
ago. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, like 10 years ago. You know what? You know what would be cool? If they took the same bird that was in the tree zone from Mario Land 2 and made that the final boss.
Mario Land 2. Oh, yeah. That would be cool. This game, like, I'm not going to read. There's actually only two more bosses. I won't go and read all of them. There is, then it goes back to interesting names. There's Zenosuke, who is the boss of Parsley Woods, and finally the genie for Sierra Castle, which I was kind of shoehorned into it because the Captain Syrup or whatever her face is, she uses a magic lamp and then to bring the genie out, then you have to fight the genie. I do remember the, like, trying to get up to that. No, I'm thinking of Mario Land 2. The six golden coins. That final boss, like the final gauntlet leading up to fighting Wario, I hate it. That was so difficult. But in this one, the game is overall super easy. Like, you can beat the game with relative ease. It's just more time consuming than anything. And as people who follow me on Instagram, you probably saw this episode coming because I posted about beating this game as well as Wario Land 2. And unfortunately, the copy we had of Wario Land 3 didn't work, so I've been having to do I've been doing research on that without the benefit of being able to play the game. But yeah, so that's pretty much all the bosses. But the genie fight, from what I remember, was interesting. The genie like shoots fireballs at you, and they chase Wario around. However, Wario can toss a coin. The genie's Oh, yeah, I remember this. So it was interesting. The way you had to fight the genie is that you would have to, like, you would have the magic lamp that it came from, and you'd have to get it upright. And then that by getting it, like, to sit it up, so essentially you were constantly throwing while dodging the genie's fireballs, you would have to throw the lamp to get it to sit upright, and then it would create clouds, and you'd have to jump on the cloud so you could jump on top of the genie's head. And that's how you just rinse, wash, and repeat. And, you know, the genie's patterns would get a little bit more difficult each time. But it was interesting because it was designed really well, because if you think about it, the way it teaches you to fight is that as you're trying to figure out what to do to fight the boss, you're going to be dodging its fireballs. And as you're running across, you're bound to hit the lamp that the genie comes from, and you're going to notice that you can move it when you run into it, and you're like going to be like, well, that's odd, why am I able to move this? Or you pick it up. So then it leads you to think, like, all right, let me just try throwing it at him, and then it doesn't do anything because you're confused why. But eventually it lands upright, and all of a sudden there's clouds. Like, I remember I didn't quite understand that the first time, and I was getting frustrated by it. And then all of a sudden the clouds showed up. I'm like, all right, I don't know what I did to trigger this. So I unfortunately did look up, because I'm an impatient fucking, you know, 2020 like baby. But realistically, you would just keep doing that. I still think it's designed well. I was impatient. I don't blame the game on that. But you throw the lamp, and then eventually it sits upright. You can jump up and, you know, rinse, wash, repeat, and jump on top of the genie's head. I thought that final boss was super fun and super rewarding for beating, mm-hmm. because it kind of brought in a lot of mechanics that you use throughout the game of, you know, picking, like, because you can pick enemies up and throw them to hurt other enemies and kill other enemies. So taking that mechanic and applying it to this fight was super fun to do. And I guess you kind of do that even in, like, Mario World, because to beat Bowser in Mario World, you have to jump on his little Mecha Koopas and throw them up,
yeah.
That I hated, because no other boss kind of made you do something like that up until that point. So I was like, this is unfair. I have no practice with accuracy with these. I was so mad when I first played that.
It is neat, too, because, you know, playing it for the first time, you know, I don't remember the first time I even tried doing that, but imagine, you know, going to that boss, Bowser's going back and forth, and then he just throws out these two Mecha Koopas. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do with these?
Yeah.
You know, you have to, like, figure it out.
Any final thoughts on the game so far? I mean, we're not done 100% just yet. I want to talk about the reception of the game a little bit, and just, you know, whatever else comes to mind. But any thoughts that you have on the game that you haven't been able to talk about yet?
I just really like the mechanics. I really liked how I could just bum rush enemies and just bulldoze like blocks and stuff just with my shoulder and just cause havoc.
Wario is a fun character. I think it made it. He became the chaotic neutral, but he's not a villain. You know, like, he was a villain in the first, in Mario Land 2, but, like, him doing that, like, them making a full game out of him was such a cool idea, because you didn't see it very often where Nintendo would take a villain and make an entire game out of that villain. Like, hell, is there any games based around Bowser at the moment? Has there ever been?
No, I don't think so.
And he's the most popular Mario villain of all time. So it's interesting that they would do that. Like, you still don't see that with Mario games.
No.
I think that's a very 90s thing to do, to make the villain the hero, because i.e. Terminator 2.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
I don't know if that's an inspiration by any stretch of the imagination. I think that's a very far stretch to be like Terminator 2 to Super Mario Land 3. Like, that's a bit of a jump.
You found him out.
That was the whole through line. That was the thread that connects everything.
Exactly.
Mario to Terminator. That would be a cool, like, panel at a con. You know, like, it would be like Super Terminator Bros, the Mario to James Cameron connection or something like that. That'd be stupid. I don't think that actually. I don't think there is actually any connection, but I just the idea of, like, the villain becoming the hero or someone who's not quite as villainous in the next game/movie is something that obviously was they've done before. And, like, now it's been done to death, but at the time, you don't really, like, I mean, now it's been done to death in terms of, like, movies. Like, Hal, have you watched the Fast and Furious movies?
No, I haven't seen any of them.
Oh, my God.
How many are there? There are like 12 of them.
Well,
I know they're doing Fast 9, right?
9's coming out, and then they have a side one called Hobbs and Shaw.
Did they have Tokyo Drift? And
that's the third one.
What else did they have?
There's 9 total if you count the one coming out this year. And
I thought Tokyo Drift was the side one. I didn't know that.
No.
Was the third. Okay.
I'm a Fast and Furious fanboy. I love that series. It has no right being as fun as it is, because it's like, it. The thing is, like, I'm not into cars, I'm not into any of that stuff, but the action is just so insane that I love it. And they've gotten to the point now where they are so self-aware of how stupid the stuff they do is, and I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
Let's just see how far we can push the envelope now.
In the 7th movie, Vin Diesel lifts up a car. Like, not the full car. What they do is that they pick a ridiculous thing, like, all right, well, we can't have him lift an entire car over his head, but, you know, he could be strong enough just to lift one end of it so someone could slide under. No, that's not how this works. They're practically superheroes in this. But anyway, so, spoiler alert for those who have not seen any of the Fast and Furious, and I don't think you really care all that much. At the end of the 6th movie, you find out that one of the deaths of the main characters was caused by someone else, and someone that you haven't met before in the series. And then it pans back and it's Jason Statham, and that's when he joins the franchise. You're like, holy shit, he's a villain. And I'm as excited. I'm like, Jason Statham's in the Fast and Furious movies. This is fucking great. And then the whole 7th movie, he is the villain. He is one of the main villains. And by the 8th movie, he's a good guy. He literally kills one of the members of the team who was with the team for a long time. And by the end of the 8th movie, they're like, all right, I mean, you did kill this guy, but, you know, your family. It's wild. At least Terminator, they have, like, it makes sense, because it's like, oh, he's a robot, he was reprogrammed. But this makes no sense, and I'm all here for it. The stupider, the better. Anyway,
Crank?
Yes.
Yeah.
Crank is basically the Fast and Furious movies, if you think. Like,
really?
I mean, in terms of absurdity, okay. Yeah. I would say Crank is more absurd in premise, because, like, have you seen both of them?
Yeah. For I saw the first one in theaters. I haven't seen the second one at home, though.
So yeah. For those who have never heard of the movies, the Crank movies are Jason Statham, and it's an action. They're both action movies. And it's about this guy who, in the first movie, his heart is like stolen, and then they essentially like they steal his heart and they put in a transplant heart, and it's only supposed to allow him to live for like 24 hours or something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember
something stupid,
like that, yeah.
And it's not supposed to last that long. So he has to, no, I'm sorry. That's the second movie. The first movie, he gets poisoned.
Yeah.
And he has to keep his adrenaline up because it slows the poison until he can get to the place where he needs to take care of the poison.
So he goes into a convenience store and just robs all the Red Bulls.
Yeah. He robs the Red Bulls. He goes into a black bar and starts yelling racial slurs and gets into a fight. And he goes on to he has sex with his girlfriend
in a rodeo.
No, that's the second movie.
Oh, the second one
in public up. in Chinatown, in whichever city he's in. And then he just leaves her, and she's like, "What just happened?" It's the craziest movie I've ever seen, and the second one's even more insane because that's when his heart gets stolen and replaced with basically a battery heart, and to keep. He has to keep finding electrical charges to keep charging up his his heart.
Stupid, I love it.
There's a scene where he takes what is it,
like jumper cables, yeah,
and ties it to like a power line and puts one end on his tongue and holds the other end with his hand. It's wild. He rubs up on an old woman who's wearing fleece so he can get the static electricity to charge up his heart. Oh my god, that movie is insane. It's so good. Anyway, Wario Land. I could talk about those movies forever. So
the reception.
What?
Reception of Wario.
Oh, yeah, reception. Yeah. I totally lost my train of thought, yeah. So we're going to talk about the reception of Wario Land 1/Mario Land 3. It didn't sell as well as the other Mario Land predecessors, but it received pretty favorable reviews. It made it onto Nintendo Power's 100 Best Nintendo Games of All Time in 1997, which I don't know if it would still be on that now. Some of these are like relatively new. Like someone reviewed the 3DS release of it. They gave it a 9 out of 10 on Nintendo Life, and also on the 3DS release, it was a 7.9 out of 10 from IGN. So that makes sense. Nintendo Life gives it a 9 out of 10, and then IGN is a little bit different. Though IGN, I know a lot of people have issues with their rating systems. And at GameRankings.com, it holds an 83.11% rating, which is pretty good. So yeah, that pretty much wraps up what I have to say about Mario Land 3. What about you, Casey?
Same. I mean, it's a very decent game. I definitely will put it on a must-own for Game Boy collectors or
it's
even
really
owners.
Good. It's really, really it's good.
Definitely worth playing and owning. And honestly, it set the bar for the sequels. 2 is my favorite.
I agree with you. Yeah, I love 2 a lot.
Yeah.
I wish I could play 3, but 3
I get the battery fixed.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because it plays, but I wonder if it's the battery just because like it's not saving or something like that.
I don't know.
But Wario Land 1 is just a really fun game. It has a lot of replayability. It kind of made the Wario games something where they wanted you to go back and replay and find all the secrets, find all the exits. I mean, hell, like we said at the very end of it, you based on how much treasure you collect determines what type of house you get. So if you don't get a big enough house, it encourages you to go back and replay the game to get more coins and get a better score so that way you can have a better house and eventually working up to a full freaking planet. So yeah.
Especially the girlfriend.
and that hidden bonus that doesn't exist.
That's in the director's cut.
Yeah, right. So yeah, I think that's a good place to wrap this episode up. Casey, thank you for joining me.
Absolutely.
For another episode.
I love that you have me on for these types of episodes.
As usual, well, actually, Casey, is there any social media you want to plug?
I guess just the Instagram, you know, the TK_KazuyaKane, just all my video game related stuff. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
And then as usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. You could also reach out to me, StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you could do that in a couple of different ways. The easiest way for all of you is just to give it a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcasting app you use. The reviews and the ratings help get more exposure for the shows to help more people find it. So that would be super helpful. You can also support me on Patreon, patreon.com/stillloadingpod. You can check it out there. Even just $1 a month will help me grow the show more. And check out the network I'm a part of, podbeardnetwork.com, and all the great, you can check out all the great podcasts on the website there. And that should do it. So thank you all once again for listening, and I will see you all next time.